From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to get right at it with our weekly segment of Nothing But the Sacks. You know, Robin Sacks, as a former ADA, a victims advocate, author, television commentator, you name it. And usually when we have her on the air, she's in different locations, kind of like The Amazing Race, isn't it, Robin?
It is. Don't reveal my place today.
You know, I won't.
Actually, you could make a contest of it, actually. If someone can where I was today.
Yeah, you
I'm
know.
Happy to have a copy of my book.
You know, good point. If they pick this is pretty amazing. If you can, you know, with even with the background noise, even if you can pick out where Robin might be, you email me, Dana@scaredmonkeys.com, Dana@scaredmonkeys.com, and we'll send you a copy of Robin's latest book free of charge. If you can guess where she was when I interviewed her, you don't have to be listening live. You can be listening to the podcast. Anyway, good evening, ma'am. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I want to start with something that isn't really crime-related, but it's a crime that we keep seeing it all the time, John and Kate plus 8. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts were I could not believe that that was the subject of an email from Dana Fetzer was my first thought. I said, what is happening to our world that Dana is asking me to weigh in on the John and Kate debacle? But you bring up a good point, because when I started thinking about, you know, how does this affect the world of crime, or how, you know, what is all of this about? It really is done to be such a pathetic statement of not just one person's family and one, you know, two people's marriage and the 4 or 8 kids that are involved in this. But what's even worse is how glued to the story
yep.
so many people are when there are the cases of the missing children, the you know, molested children, the abused women, the abused, you know, the gang violence and all the other crimes that don't make news out there, as you do here on Scared Monkeys, and as we will be doing hopefully sometime soon on Justice Interrupted again, highlighting the cases that don't make the media, and the fact that there's so many airwaves are stuck in the story, kind of depressing.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, and that was my point, is that it's nonstop. All you have to do is to go to Google and Google John and Kate, and you'll get everything from, well, you name it. You'll get thousands and tens of thousands of hits, and you have to wonder, you know, Larry King covering it, all the cable news shows, the high-profile shows, you have to wonder. I know the public have a fascination with this kind of stuff, but you must wonder, Robin, what stories are being missed with all the airtime this nonsense is getting.
Right, well, and the thing to me, and I know that this is a, you know, a big challenge, but the only way to stop the frenzy is to stop the frenzy, and that is for viewers and television watchers and radio listeners, tours and, you know, blog readers and posters and so forth to boycott these BS stories and turn their nose and head a different way and move on to something that really matters, and that's taking a huge leap of faith in our American public to join in this crusade.
You know, the attorney aspect comes into play now with questions of conduct regarding John Gosselin's lawyer, Heller, I think is his last name, and all the pundits coming on the cable shows and the websites like TMZ and Radar Online and others digging into the background, so to speak. And from the attorney perspective, Robin, you know, once you get a high-profile case like this, you're pretty much open to all sorts of scrutiny, are you not?
Well, it's the blessing and the curse of being in the media. I mean, the fact of the matter is while it doesn't seem right to delve into the personal matters of the different players that are involved in the case, there can be some value. I mean, I have to tell you, whenever I got on a case and had a new defense lawyer that I didn't know, the first thing I would do is type in their state bar number and look and see if they've had any disciplinary action. And, you know, not for salacious purposes, but to see what kind of competency I'm dealing with and making sure that I have an ethical lawyer, and actually a licensed lawyer always helps too. And then you can't, you know, and then you go look at their website and you go Google them and see what they've done, because you want to know what you're dealing with. So I don't think that that's not appropriate, to be honest with you. I mean, if the lawyer, you know, he who takes those cases or she who takes those cases or puts themselves out there has to expect that that's going to be part of the very generic discovery process.
Robin Sachs is here. This is our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. And again, if you're wondering what that background noise is, and you can figure out where Robin is while we're interviewing her right now, send me an email, and if you get it right, we're going to send you a copy of Robin's latest book. And if you get it right, I will eat a copy of Robin's latest book.
Yeah, well, let me also tell you, this will be for a copy of The Idiot's Guide, since that just came out this week.
Okay. All right. We're talking John and Kate, and we're going to get off that topic in a minute, but I've got one more question. I'm not sure if you saw the exchange between Nancy Grace and John Gosselin, and good for Nancy Grace.
I did. It was great.
I thought it was fantastic. But you have to look at the hypocrisy of this, him wanting to shut off the TLC cameras, yet selling his kid's birthday to Entertainment Tonight. And now I want you to take your lawyer's hat off and let's talk about the entertainment aspect of this, or the TV aspect of this, for someone who's now in the media. You know, doesn't the media have something better to do than cover this story? Or are they doing it right because so many people are interested in it?
You know, it's a quandary that I see and deal with in the media side of my life on a daily basis. It's the constant push-pull of, you know, what can you do that's ethical, and what can you do that feels like it's complementary to the person that you want to portray or the person that you are, and fulfill the need that's out there in society. And I was at a very interesting breakfast yesterday with a movie producer, a television producer, and, you know, we were talking about the integrity of some of these judge shows and, you know, the Judge Judy's, the Judge Joe Browns, the Judge Penny's, and so forth, and talking about the characters behind them, because really what Nancy Grace will ultimately become, or it seems to be, is that she's going to get herself into daytime syndicated shows. Yeah. And that's why you saw her on that program, was as a, you know, if you will, it was a sizzle, it was a, you know, a preview of what she would be doing. That those people that watch those shows during the day is representative of a particular demographic, and that's exactly what the media looked at, is what is the demographic watching those shows, and they don't put the stuff on that doesn't get the ratings. I mean, look at Letterman, look at everything else. So, you know, again, like I said before, the only way to make the crowd get off is to boycott the crowd, but, you know, I don't see anybody doing that.
You know, it's a perfect segue into our next topic, and you're going to probably give me hell here for talking about Letterman, but again, here's another story that's fascinating. It has intrigue, it has alleged extortion, it has a producer from 48 Hours, a crime story, and some of the reports that are coming out today is that he may have got his idea from a extortion segment that he produced on 48 Hours. What's your thoughts about Crazy Dave and all his girlfriends?
So it's so funny because I wrote a little post for it about it on my Sackback today, and I'm getting lots of flack from my feminist friends who think that I'm just, you know, a big hypocrite, because I actually think that what Letterman did, and at least coming clean, was the honorable thing to do. Not having sex with, you know, your subordinates is a good idea, but that being aside, looking at this in the case and in the light we should be looking at it, is that David Letterman, in this case, in the case of extortion in the criminal case, is the victim. And I think that it's good, actually, that we saw this example, to be honest with you, because I don't think that this was an exploitation of the media in any way. I think that this was an embarrassment by David Letterman, that he had to go into his forum to publicly announce what was going on. he also is facing the ramifications that anyone would face if they went to law enforcement and had to weigh the same decisions that any victim would have to weigh. And clearly he was in fear for his life. And so I thought that it had a couple of good messages in terms of everyday crime. Number one is, to admit your mistakes, it's come clean, and, sometimes, sooner rather than later is better. And also it promoted reporting to law enforcement and not taking this into his own hands. I mean, sure, he has enough money that he could have paid this off or made this go away quietly and could have done any number of things, but he went to the police, and that's what we want to see people do.
Yeah, you're right. And you have to wonder how many high-profile extortion cases or even low-profile extortion cases, the affair situation, whatever, that don't go to the police and payoffs are actually made. I think it's a big problem that we don't hear much about.
Right, and we don't hear about it because that's the whole point. The extortion works, and how many other people are victimized, and celebrities can be victims too. And, we can sort of beat up on them when they deserve it. Let's give them credit and sympathize with them during those times too.
Yeah, I agree. Good for Letterman on this one. Robin Sachs is here with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. Actually, I just got an email with a guess as far as where you might be. It says she is in Oslo, Norway, investigating the crime of Barack Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, I actually should be on that story. I'm curious to investigate that one myself.
Well, yeah, that we'll talk about that later. But
<We're wrong.
laughs> but let's get into a little bit more into Letterman and then change topics. We're going to jump all over the place today. With this, and again, there's going to be trial coverage, and every state is different when it comes to what goes to the media and what doesn't go to the media. And so you get some states like Florida where a lot of discovery is public. You get some other states where nothing becomes public. So there's a lot of speculation as far as what goes on in the media. And either right or wrong, it's not as, you look at the Anthony case. What is the state of New York like? Can you comment on that? Will we hear more about this Letterman case?
Oh, actually, the state of New York is very similar to the state of California, where the documents that are filed that become a matter of public record generally are only things such as the charging document, which is the item that lists the, in this case, it was actually filed by indictment. So you will just actually see the indictment, the charges listed. The bail amount, which is what's done, anything that would be done in an open courtroom, basically. That's what the rules are. Anything that you would hear in open court is a matter of public record or is filed in open court. Police reports are not part of the official record. As a matter of fact, judges are not even supposed to look at the police reports without the agreement of both parties. So, now Florida is a wide-open state. Their discovery and access to information is fantastic. That allows for the dissemination of a ton of information. Where we get a lot of information in these other cases tends to come from the information that you get from actual witnesses or victims.
There seems to be a little bit of, what's the term I can use here, panic with the public and maybe in some of the media when it comes to the Kaylee Anthony case. Her mother Casey is alleged to have killed her, and now we're starting to see some motions from defense to dismiss the charges and questions as far as the forensics, etc. With such a high profile case and the defense not being able to stay off television or stay out of the media, this really isn't all that unusual, is it?
What else can you, you're going to fight with the ammo that you have available if you're a defense attorney. And so what better ammo do you have than the passage of the information that we all talk about? And that's one that's just right there begging for some sort of, motion to come its way. Whether it's going to be successful or not is a whole other avenue. I would be curious. I mean, I'm sure that Casey Anthony's lawyers, and I'm forgetting both of their names, I can visualize them right now, but I can imagine that the best coup for them personally and professionally would be, okay, well, the trial goes on, the information stands, but maybe it would in the future be the basis of some sort of appeal, and then the legacy that they have as lawyer lives far beyond just the Casey Anthony case in and of itself.
I thought it was strange, and I'm not sure if you saw the interview between Jose Baez, one of Casey Anthony's attorneys, and Geraldo Rivera, where he asked the question, with this being the potential of a death penalty case, why not take a plea deal and try to save the life of your client? And his response was, instead of saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, that she's innocent on all that, is that, well, that's up to her. What do you read into that?
Well, first of all, yes, technically, a plea deal is up to the client. However, one of the most effective tools that a defense attorney has is client control. Every defendant I've ever seen starts off saying, there's no way, I'm not taking any deal, I didn't do it, blah, 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 blah. But a good defense attorney will sit with the client and weigh the pros and cons, analyze the facts, analyze the realities, look at the evidence from an objective point of view and say, listen, based on these factors, I'm concerned that you may get convicted. And if you get convicted, this is a likely outcome, kind of what the conversation they're supposed to be having behind closed doors. And to me, that comment means I'm not fighting too hard for closed doors to explain all the risks to her. Because frankly, I think that there's a conflict here with Jose Baez in terms of if he settles this case, the case is done and over.
Yeah.
So his time in the spotlight is done and over. So what's the motivation for him to settle the case? If it's a case that goes down on, then she goes down. She's going to go down on it anyway.
Yeah.
So from his point of view, he might as well make as much of squeaky wheels everywhere he can. So then he gets other clients out there who say, oh, he will fight it, no matter what, and get a lot of clients and milk the exposure and milk everything else. And then he can always later on blame her for not willing to cooperate. But I think that is really ineffective assistance of counsel. And at times, depending on what the deal may be, almost malpractice. Now, on the other hand, let me put in perspective the prosecution point of view or his view from the prosecution point of view. If they're not offering her some sort of sentence that's an incentive to plea, then her perspective is, I'm going down on this anyway. I'm going to be doing 80, 100 years. What's the point? I might as well have my day in court and see if I can do better. So they have to make an offer that's even worth her considering so that they can have that heart-to-heart conversation.
Yeah, that's a good point. Robin Sachs is here. And let's look at something came out today, and I'm not sure if you saw it because you're out in Norway trying to investigate Obama. No, I happen to be flipping around the TV as I do occasionally, and I come across a show, The Insider, excellent show. I'm not sure if you've done it yet or not, but yeah, there you go. And they do a segment with Drew Peterson's stepdaughter. Did you see that today?
I did not see it today, although I do TiVo it because my dear friend Darren Cavanoghi is a regular on that show, actually been a guest on your show.
Yes.
Although I have to admit that his mother and I both agree he's always had a face much more for radio than he has for TV. Just kidding, Darren. We love you. But anyway, go on. No, I didn't see it yet.
Anyway, I'll segue or I'll get to my point here as far as why I'm asking you if you saw this. An ex-stepdaughter who's come forward to say that she was sexually molested by Peterson. Wow. I thought the interview was fantastic. She seemed, well, in the five-minute segment that I saw, very credible. This wasn't some of the those who have come forward in the Peterson saga who looked like they were only looking for 15 minutes of fame. This was a true, down-to-earth young woman who was telling a horror story. How this is going to, I think, damage Peterson immensely, or am I wrong when it comes to credibility of the accused here?
Well, listen, my natural choice and venue for disclosure is never in front of a camera.
Right.
As a prosecutor and as a media person, I like the first disclosure, the first opportunity to tell a story always to be vetted through law enforcement, by and through law enforcement. Now, having said that, my guess is that she must have been disclosed to law enforcement. She must have been involved in an investigation. There must have been that because given what you're saying, that she sounds incredible and she sounded like this isn't BS, given that, my guess is that she probably did try those routes first and then chose to go to a media outlet that it could be heard, possibly because it was outside of the statute of limitations, but it's not chargeable anyway.
Right, yep.
On a host of other issues, I can't obviously intelligently comment on it without having seen or heard it, but there are reasons and approaches that do make it important, and probably the most important reason, in my opinion, about seeing people disclose sexual assault goes back to an article I wrote actually for the Huffington Post several months ago about we got to start talking about sexual assault. I mean, everyone talks about breast cancer. You can practically go feel yourself up in a mall and call yourself doing a breast exam, and no one will think twice of it. But people squirm. I mean, you don't even hear talk about the Dorito case too much anymore, and I think that that's because people get squirmy about sexual assault. I think Mackenzie Phillips was really troubling people because it made people squirmish and it was icky. And so the more we can just put it out there to normalize it, perhaps more victims won't feel like they're so outcasted and so, so much of a pariah of the society that they will actually be able to not just be a victim but become a survivor and also get the help that they need.
You know, and we're going to finish up here pretty quick. Robin Sachs is here, and I want to talk a little bit about Greedo. It's all about education, and no one would have thought, or at least most people that sit back in their easy chairs at night and go and work 8 to 5, that a case like Greedo could happen. Well, there's lots of them happening every day. Will the exposure that case has had, although not enough in my opinion because it's been taken over by John and Kate, will that help other victims come forward, or do we still have this stigma of re-victimization where the victims are scared, they don't want to go through the whole process, they just want to, you know, get it over with, so to speak, and not get involved with the system?
Well, it's actually my hope that a case like Garrido would actually put people in a place of more comfort. The one thing that's, I don't want to say nice, but the launch pad for the Garrido case, if you will, is the fact that this was a case that was a stranger abduction case that happened right in front of Carl Proven, JC's stepdad, and he was, you know, whatever you think of him now, for better or for worse, the man lived 18 years being looked at as a potential suspect or being involved. Well, he sat there and witnessed his stepdaughter being abducted by this couple in the gray car. And I think that it's really easy for people to talk about strangers. Oh, I don't know anyone who could do this. Oh, it can't happen to my kid. Oh, it happened there. Blah, 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 blah. And so my hope is that we start that part of the conversation, but recognize that in 86% of the cases, and, you know, as at the lowest, and 92% at the most, sexual assault occurs in relationships in which the perpetrator knows the victim. And given that, those are the conversations we need to have, and the launch pad is the Garrido case and some of these other cases out there that allow for those kinds of conversations.
Absolutely. Robin Sachs, her webpage is robinsachs.com. You can catch her on the cable news shows, buy her book, listen to her on this program. She's an expert at what she does. Thanks, Robin. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you so much. Bye, Dana. Sorry for the noise.
That's no problem. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, try and figure out where Robin was. If you do, I'll be amazed. Dana@scaredmonkeys.com. Send me an email, and we'll send you a book. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back with a victim's mom. And the blog that she's writing with called Time's Up, Searching Out Solutions for Victims of Crime. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. If I read from my next guest's blog entry here, I'm just going to steal a couple of lines, which I think are very poignant. It says, we need more education and awareness of the overwhelming problem of domestic violence. I'm going to repeat that because I stumbled through it. We need more education and awareness of the overwhelming problems of domestic violence. Families and friends need to actively advocate for their battered loved ones. Instead of judging or blaming a battered woman for staying or taking him back, many are convinced they are safer to stay. Some go back numerous times. I've called this an epidemic, domestic violence. I think education, like I said, we need move education and awareness. I said more, but it's move education and awareness for these gals. And my next guest, Cherry Simpson, has, you know, without sounding flip, has been to hell and back. Her daughter, Reagan, is a spousal rape and abuse victim. Of course, an excellent story. We've covered it here on the program. But one woman's struggle to escape abuse by reporter Megan Towey was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, and it's a story when you hear it, it makes your eyes go wide open. We haven't had Cherry on for a while. Hi, Cherry.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for coming back. And the reason I wanted to bring you on is there's a blog that you've started writing for, an excellent blog. I've gone through it, checked it out. And again, I think anything that we can do to educate the folks is important, called Time's Up, Searching Out Solutions for Victims of Crime. And for you listeners, either listening live or on the podcast, just click on the link on the show notes and it will take you right there. Tell us, Cherry, about Time's Up.
Time's Up is a great collection of women and men that have either had some sort of experience with being a victim of crime or working with victims of crime, or it's for the victims of crime, though, and it's on behalf of them, trying to search out solutions. You know, it's kind of neat, Dana, that you've got me on the show, because I don't know if you remember, but one of the very first times I ever spoke to you, I told you we needed something just like this.
Absolutely. You know, I do remember, and you know, one thing about my old weathered mind here is that I remember my guests, I remember the poignancy of their comments, and your story and your daughter's story is one that, you know, we can't forget. You know, your story with Reagan, and, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about that and the system and the breakdown of the system and the highs and lows, I guess, for your family and your daughter, I think, are just amazing. Just when you think things are going good, bang, you get hit with something and it drops you right back down, and that had to have been terrible to deal with. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Oh, it was. It's not, the justice system isn't what you think it is. And it's funny that I just wrote the next blog for the next time that I'm up. And it's about making a statement and fighting for a cure. And I think that it's interesting that if you were to compare medicine to law, In medicine, you've got to take an oath that says first you will do no harm. It'd sure be nice if we'd have something like that in law for victims.
Yeah, isn't that truth? And
yeah.
And again, you know, I sound like a broken record, but what you say is so much the truth that we have to educate right from the bottom up. That includes all the workers, police officers, social workers, lawyers, attorneys, judges, the system, the government, the politicians, and Mary and John Public, who, unless it really happens to them, and even then, sadly, we go back to the old days where, you know, they just ignore it because they don't want people to find out the trouble that they've been in. They don't get involved, and that's why it's at a epidemic stage, or am I wrong?
No, I agree. In fact, you know, what's funny about that is I kind of liken it to the Good Samaritan story,
mm-hmm.
You know, where that was the original victim of crime laying in the ditch. And how many people walked by him,
mm-hmm.
until the Good Samaritan stopped and at risk for his own life went in there and got him out and then tended his wounds and took care of him for the next year. You know, that's what's happening all across our country with victims of crime, not just domestic violence, but those that go missing or are raped or murdered. You know, people just keep on going by. They don't act upon anything. They aren't trying to reach out and help somebody else. And that's where I think, you know, family members need to do this. And it's something that, you know, I did with my daughter. I'm a big believer in ask and tell.
Mm-hmm.
Because where does crime live? It lives in the dark. It hides.
Yeah.
And so the best thing you can possibly do is put it in the light.
No.
I always say put it in the sunlight and God will take care of the rest. And, and you know, that's what I did. I told the pastors, I told the teachers, I told family members, I told the Chicago Tribune. I got on Dana Bredzer's show, and I told everybody that would listen. And I think that's the best thing that you can possibly do because, you know, and I honestly think it's the most loving thing you can do for a criminal.
Yep.
Is to tell the truth. You know, I remember when I sat in the courtroom and I read my daughter's victim's impact statement, and I remember I know I felt like I was the first person to tell him the truth.
You know,
and it's so funny, Dana, throughout this whole process, I felt like I've discovered things.
Mm-hmm.
That should be known to victims. Like, I did not realize at the time that victim's impact statement should have been sent to the probation officer assigned to the pre-sentencing report in the weeks prior and also the prison review board after the sentencing. Now, thankfully, you know, I did that because I kind of took the shotgun approach because I was so desperate to save my daughter. I just wrote everybody. I contacted everybody. And I have recently found out that what I did was a very good thing because it can frequently, significantly influence the sentencing and the probation, and I believe it's one of the reasons why he had his parole revoked.
And according to your article, he's back in jail till 2010 sometime.
Yes. As far as we know, unless he gets somehow some restorative good time. I mean, I have learned, if anything, throughout all of this, to not believe it until after it comes about.
Yeah, that's
you know, you know, you probably know this because you're in law enforcement.
Yeah, that's for sure. I want to talk about Reagan a little bit, Cherry. You know, the strength not only with the family but the victims themselves and how they can turn their own nightmare into a way to help others. You know, Reagan has been writing to the survivor blogs and to the the National Domestic Violence Hotline and all this sort of stuff. Let's talk about her strength and being able to persevere.
Well, I've encouraged her, and she is my little hero. She really is, and she says that she knows she's her children's only hope. And, you know, because of her involvement in helping others, she has realized, just like so many other people that you know, Susan Murphy Milano.
Yes.
She knows that helping others helps you. And, I mean, you see Mark Klaus, you know, where he took a terrible tragedy and has turned that around to help so many. I think that that's the good that God brings from evil.
And there has to be that. There has to be the term hope. And we're going to just finish up here quickly. Cherry, when I use that term hope from the perspective of the family and the victim, what does that mean to you?
Future, a regular life, happiness, joy, peace. That's what we want. We want more than 450 days.
Mm-hmm.
Of freedom, which is what we'll have if he gets out, when he's supposed to get out. You know, we want more than that. We want a regular life like we used to have. We want a normal life for the children. We want a future for them. We want to hear them laugh and play and go to school and do well, which is what they have been doing now for the last couple of months since we know where he's at and where he's supposed to stay for at least 450 more days.
And to be able not to have to look over their shoulder unless it's mom or grandma calling them to ask them what they're doing or how they're doing. You know, Cherry, your story is so important, and Reagan's is so important that we'll keep covering it. We'll keep fighting the fight here. The blog is Time's Up, Searching Out Solutions for Victims of Crime. Just click on the link on our show notes. And listen, say hi to Reagan for me, and you're welcome on the program here anytime.
Oh, thank you so much, and God bless you, Dana, for what you do.
We'll talk soon, Cherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Cherry Simpson, and make sure and check out the blog. Mike McIntyre is next. You'll know Mike as a crime reporter, syndicated radio host, and author. We're going to take a break here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. You'll know my next guest. Mike McIntyre is a syndicated radio host, a crime reporter, a crime author, and an all-around nice guy. You click on the link to go to his webpage, mikeoncrime.com, and listen to his radio show, Crime and Punishment, Sunday nights on the Chorus and Rolco Radio Network. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Dana, how are you?
Good. Haven't had you on for a while. Now, I want to start with just some silly stuff. We do that now and then here on the show. You know from watching American cable TV, like I watch American cable TV, that John and Kate plus eight and all that kind of nonsense seems to overshadow some of the bigger stories. We don't see that so much up here in Canada, although Stephen Harper playing the piano seemed to take over the airwaves a little bit.
Yeah, that's our latest tabloid story, I guess, or as much into tabloid as we get. But you're right. I don't know. I guess Canadians maybe were a little more unimpressed with celebrity, or maybe we're just a little more down home and regular folk that we don't get all that impressed by celebrity and all it encompasses. You're right, or maybe it's a function of the media. Maybe our media just don't make such a big deal out of it. But whatever the reason, we definitely don't get caught up. I think we're just a fairly modest group as Canadians.
Now, is that as Canadians or as media? Because I'll bet you there's quite a few Canadians that have to get their daily John and Kate update.
Oh, no doubt. And, just go to any grocery store and you see people grabbing it or sneaking a peek. Lots of people, of course, don't want to admit that they would subscribe to tabloid journalism. But, it is interesting because all often cover crime stories, and naturally a lot of them have some sensational details to them. And one of the criticisms you'll see in online chat forums and feedback is people who think that you are sensationalizing stories and say, leave that tabloid crap to the Americans. And that's something I hear quite often. And it's not a deliberate attempt. Some people just assume that you must be sensationalizing stories because of the details. But, I just think we here in Canada, we have a lot, of course, to concern ourselves with, and maybe just don't get caught up in the daily lives and trials and tribulations of celebrities. That's not to say we're not interested in it. I just don't think there's the same obsession that you maybe get. And I guess it's also a product of the media. I mean, a lot of what you see in the U.S. is being force-fed on the population. Certainly there are more choices than ever these days for people to get their entertainment fix with so many channels out there. But, a lot of the 24-hour news coverage that you see is really nothing more than Entertainment Tonight dressed up as a newscast.
Yeah, exactly. Mike McIntyre is here. Speaking of a Hollywood angle and a high-profile case with Roman Polanski, when you look at the reaction from the Hollywood types, Mike, and then you look at the big picture, I think it was Dennis Miller I saw on O'Reilly a few weeks ago saying, it's an old man, I initially thought, but then when I read the transcript of the case, he said that he hoped California brought this guy back and he spent every day that he deserves to in jail. Let's talk about Roman Polanski.
Yeah, someone should send that transcript to Whoopi Goldberg, who infamously on The View a couple weeks ago, I think, angered a lot of folks when she said that this wasn't rape, whatever she meant by that. She was sort of mitigating what Roman Polanski did, and more or less excusing his behavior with a new definition that's certainly getting mocked and ridiculed in some quarters. It's not rape, according to Whoopi Goldberg. Look, Roman Polanski did a terrible thing. He's obviously been able to use his wealth and his international reach to more or less hide from the law and from justice. And, you know, should just because he's got time on his side now and he's older and wiser and probably not the same person he was when he committed this offense, does that still give him a free pass? I mean, for the criminal who can't just hop on a plane and become this international, you know, famous celebrity director, and who has to stay around and face the music immediately, I mean, why should that guy go to prison but Polanski gets a sweet deal out of it? So I think, you know, he's ran long enough. He's been able to obviously live a good life, but the fact is he's got to pay the piper, and I hope that he doesn't just get a free pass here and a clean slate, because I think that it's long overdue. And for the family of the victim, no doubt they want to see justice done as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike McIntyre is here. You've not only written about pedophiles, but you've covered them for many years with your job as a crime reporter. But we all know that with Polanski, this probably isn't his first kick at the cat, to excuse the term there. But it's an education thing, Mike. The people just don't understand the whole fact of, sex offenders, pedophilia, and all that sort of stuff, and rehabilitation. Is this more of an education thing that we not only need to educate the people, but we need to educate the Hollywood people too?
Oh, for sure. And I think some of Hollywood's now getting a bit of a crash course in education, and perhaps they ought to be getting some sensitivity training as well. I mean, there's always this sense of entitlement you see, right, with so many celebrities that they can sort of get away with whatever they want. And I think you're seeing that some of Polanski's, friends and associates are now coming out of the woodwork and making excuses for him and that sort of thing. But absolutely, I think, the issue of pedophilia, it's often been said that there is no cure for pedophilia, and I don't know that anyone would dispute that. A leopard never necessarily changes their spots. I mean, you could control it, and there are all kinds of medical opinions out there about ways that one can control these urges, but the fact is, if you are attracted to children in a sexual way, I mean, that is something that never completely goes away. And because of that, no doubt a lot of people who get involved in this sort of thing have probably got away with a lot of other things that never, were disclosed. And by that same stretch of the imagination, one can never be certain that the offending behavior is done with.
Yeah.
Who knows when the next victim could come along and when the person could strike again.
Yeah, for sure. Mike McIntyre is here. With the I want to get into politics a little bit, Mike, with the upcoming election. It's going to happen eventually. They've been playing games so much here that now that Harper has gone and played a Beatles song and his poll numbers are up, I think he's going to drop the hammer here any day. But what I like about the Conservatives is their crime platform. Now, they've been able to talk, but because of their minority status, they haven't been able to walk the walk. Let's go over it a little bit, what they've been talking about. But we don't hear that much up here with the government actually pushing for law and order.
Yeah, I mean, there are several provisions on the table. I think the big one to a lot of Canadians is two-for-one credit, which is seen as a bit of a blight on the justice system. For those unfamiliar with two-for-one, as it's come to be known, in Canada, pretty much every criminal gets 2 days credit for every day that they spend in jail up until the time that they are sentenced. So it doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter how long you spend behind bars, when your day of reckoning comes along, you are usually going to take whatever amount of time you have done behind bars up until then and multiply it by two to then be eaten away off whatever remaining sentence, if there is any remaining sentence. I mean, what we've seen, Dana, is a lot of criminals know how to play the system in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They will stretch their cases out for long periods of time, get all kinds of adjournments and delays. And it's not unusual. I've covered many cases like this where, you know, somebody will do 30 months in prison that magically becomes 60. And all of a sudden, you know, on paper, they've done 5 years, and a judge says, well, that's enough. And so that's something our conservative government is very adamant about eliminating, and I say it's long overdue.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike McIntyre is here. Mike, you know, I was in your hometown, about a month or so ago, and I can remember coming to Winnipeg a few years back and being able to drive around just fine. But it has become a very busy city. And what we see in the press is we see the Winnipeg police under fire sometimes, making decisions that can be questioned sometimes. And in Canada, if it isn't Toronto or Montreal or Vancouver or now Calgary and Edmonton, we don't hear much about it. But crime, I guess, the way that we look at it and the way we define it, even here out west, is we're just as busy as these other places.
Oh, absolutely, and certainly the police are in a bit of a no-win situation these days because there's no doubt that they are facing, all kinds of challenges on the streets of Winnipeg, where I'm from. There has been a real surge in violent crime, and specifically gang crime and gun crimes, and that's a big distinction to make. There are more guns on the streets of Winnipeg, and the same could be said, I think, for a lot of Canadian cities, than perhaps ever before. More and more criminals that police are encountering are armed. By that same token, more and more criminals that police are encountering are high out of their minds on all kinds of drugs, crack cocaine being a real big one. I'd say crack cocaine these days is an epidemic in many Canadian cities, big and small, Winnipeg being one of them. So you've got more unpredictable behavior based on, you know, drug use. You've got more guns on the street. And the police, of course, are encountering a lot of these criminals. And there has been some criticism. Certainly one of the running controversies in Manitoba is the police dealing with the Aboriginal population. Because a lot of the criminals that police are encountering are Aboriginal. There's been all kinds of history, you know, with Aboriginals accusing police of singling them out. I mean, essentially what you see in a lot of American cities with racial profiling of African Americans, that's essentially what kind of allegations you get in Winnipeg. And relations between the police service and the Native community are not very good, and there have been many, many incidents where police have tasered, in fact, some cases shot and killed suspects that have led to criticism. And again, it's one of those situations where it's hard to blame the police for being a wee bit paranoid on the streets these days because we all know what they are facing. At the same time, the police still have to uphold their duty, and this is not necessarily a very pleasant time to be a police officer.
Yeah, tell me about it, my friend. Tell me about it. Mike McIntyre is here. Something that my American listeners will recognize is like the three-strike law or mandatory minimum sentences in the United States. It's something that we don't hear much of up here, but something, again, that the government is considering. Your thoughts?
They are certainly moving towards more mandatory minimums. Right now, there's only a handful in this country, murder being one of them. There's a mandatory minimum life sentence. Of course, with that comes parole eligibility. And depending on the degree of murder, it could either be set at 10 years or 25 years. There are some mandatory minimums for gun crimes that have been introduced a few years back in response to the rising number of gun offenses. I don't know that that's actually reduced the number of gun offenses. Mm-hmm. If anything, it seems like we have more than ever. But yeah, mandatory minimums are now being looked at for many violent crimes where they don't exist. Even crimes such as impaired driving causing death, perhaps one of the most controversial crimes, the scourge of drinking and driving in Canada remains. Seems like every other day we're hearing yet another tragic story of someone or a bunch of people losing their lives. And so, you know, that's one area. Certainly, you know, sexual assault and child pornography now has some mandatory minimums that have just been introduced. And that does seem to be the way to go. the huge problem, though, Dana, and I've got no problem with mandatory minimums. I do have a problem, though, with where you're going to put all these people.
Yep.
Because the fact is, overcrowding is a massive concern in Canada. All facilities are hugely overcrowded. We just had a riot in Brandon Correctional Institute in Western Manitoba last week. Saskatchewan's had all kinds of problems with, computer issues where people are being released when they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
And no doubt that's being caused by some of the workload that these institutions are facing. So unless you're going to build a whole bunch of new jails overnight, I don't know where you're going to put all these people without making a bad situation worse.
Yeah, and in Canada, and in this province in particular, we're more of a rehabilitative society when it comes to sentencing. The judges are into that, and that's okay, I guess, to a point. Where I'm more old-fashioned, if you do the crime, you do the time, as Beretta used to say. But you're right. You got to have a place to put them, and the government talks about it, but they don't seem to want to spend the money to do it.
No, and certainly this government does talk a good talk and have made some very important moves and have proposed some others. But, I think you've got to have that support in place. And, you know, just ask any corrections officer, any guard in the federal prison system right now, and they are probably as stressed as they've ever been. And with the increasing gang crimes, Dana, you've got all the tensions behind bars. I mean, that's what spurs on some of these riots, these altercations. I know a lot of folks, I mean, I get this all the time, people saying, why can't we just put all these criminals on a deserted island, or let's ship them up into northern Canada in the middle of nowhere and, make them do work camps or boot camps. You get all kinds of ideas. Of course, others have said maybe we ought to bring back capital punishment to Canada. That would thin out the criminal herd a little bit. Certainly a lot of talk going on and a lot of anger, which becomes apparent just reading the stories that seem to make headlines on a regular basis.
What's planned for crime and punishment on Sunday?
Well, it's, of course, the Thanksgiving weekend here in
yep.
Canada, and even though it's a holiday weekend, we do not take holidays, so we'll be live across the Chorus and Rocco network from coast to coast. Several interesting stories we're going to talk about. In fact, I just covered a murder case, Dana, on Friday morning, which is ripped right out of a bizarre and tragic movie, in the sense that you had a woman who was buried alive, a pregnant Winnipeg woman. Her two killers on Friday were both given life sentences after pleading guilty. This is just a despicable act, one of the worst that I've ever covered in my career, and we will have plenty to talk about this case. This woman was killed because, well, there's some suggestion she was killed because she didn't want to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And her boyfriend grew very upset with her and ultimately hatched a plot to kill her. And this happened on Valentine's Day a couple years ago. It was just a terrible case, and we'll have lots more details on it.
That's Crime and Punishment Sundays on the Ralco and Chorus Radio Networks. Mike McIntyre, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
It's always fun. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Mike McIntyre. Check out his webpage at mikeoncrime.com, and you can see that Mike does a pretty good show. You know, it's rare up here to actually find a show like Mike's or mine, if you can put me into that same category, something that Canada is missing. That's why I'm so pleased to be able to do my show and have a majority of my audience in the United States of America, and of course our Canadian friends too are always welcome here on Scared Monkeys Radio. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure and tune in to the podcast, daily commentary, or, of course, live shows at the webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. And like I say, the creme de la creme of blogs is at scaredmonkeys.com. We'll see you again real soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Good night.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.